Streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A judge has dismissed two more counts in former President Donald Trump's election interference case in Georgia. CBS's Nicole Killian.
These counts are around the issue of filing false documents related to the so-called false elector scheme, a meeting of these alleged false electors in Georgia back in December of 2020.
Trump faces 8 out of the original 13 counts. The presidential candidates take their post-debate stumping to the battleground states of Arizona and North Carolina, both bringing up the topic of another debate. CBS's Michael Toscano.
First, it was an all caps with exclamation point social media post saying there will be no debate. Then this at a rally in Tucson, Arizona.
Because we've done two debates and because they were successful, there will be no third debate.
That includes the one with President Biden and the one with Vice President Harris, who was happy with her performance.
Two nights ago, Donald Trump and I had our first debate.
She was at a rally in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And I believe we owe it to the voters to have another debate.
Michael Toscano, CBS News.
California's largest wildfire right now, the Bridge Fire, has damaged lifts at a ski area and incinerated at least 40 homes and cabins in Mount Baldy and Wrightwood. A neighbor told Chuck Lyons that his house was engulfed in flames.
What a loss. But it takes a couple days for something like that to hit you and you realize the magnitude of your loss.
The Bridge Fire is 0% contained. Cleanup has been underway from Hurricane Francine, which hit the Louisiana coast as a Category 2 storm yesterday. CBS's Dave Malkoff has more from Houma, where retaining walls are being addressed.
They're in the process of putting up a temporary wall here. Beyond that, there are steel beams that were ripped in half by the hurricane, razor sharp at the head level. And the National Hurricane Center has said most of the injuries actually happen after a hurricane has passed.
Heavy rainfall and tornado threats remain for portions of Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and the Florida Panhandle. Federal and state health officials are trying to figure out how a patient in Missouri caught a bird flu strain from dairy cows. CBS's Alexander Tin.
It remains unclear how that virus spread to the Missouri patient. The CDC says Missouri has found no direct ties to contaminated raw milk, infected cows, or other sick animals that could explain how the virus is now spreading.
New York City Police Commissioner Edward Caban resigns just over a week after Fed seized his phone as part of an investigation. Mayor Eric Adams saying of the resignation.
I respect his decision and I wish him well.
Retired FBI official Tom Donilon is named interim police commissioner. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Water levels are low on the Mississippi River. That's making things tough for shippers and Wisconsin farmers. Jimmy Kuska reports.
The USDA says that grain shipping is being limited, especially around St. Louis, as officials deal with water levels as low as they've been the last 2 years. In the last week of August alone, grain shipping dropped 17%. The effects will mostly be felt by farmers, with costs up 57% compared to the three-year average. Costs this year are up 8% over last year. I'm Jimmy Kuska.
The Waukesha County executive is diagnosed with a rare form of cancer. Paul Farrow says he plans to keep working through his chemotherapy treatments. Farrow's been Waukesha County executive since 2015. Before that, he served in the state legislature. He announced the news to the public in a YouTube video this week. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
The Packers go from QB1 to QB2. Hi, I'm Jimmy Kuska with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. With Jordan Love out for a few weeks with an MCL sprain, Malik Willis is stepping into the starting quarterback spot in Green Bay. Willis says he's been trying to learn quickly since being traded for this preseason.
It's been pretty much around the clock since I got here. That's the reality of this thing. You try to come in and be ready to go if you're called upon. And like you said, you just work each day, and that's it. That's all you can do. That's all you can control, you know what I mean?
The Packers play the Colts this Sunday. Each team will be looking for its first win. The Brewers were blown out in San Francisco 13-2 on Wednesday. Milwaukee has lost 6 of its past 9 games, but the Brewers still lead the NL Central by 8.5 games over the Cubs. The Brewers and Giants wrap up their series today. On Saturday, one of college football's top programs comes to Madison. Wisconsin will play host to Alabama. Kickoff is at 11 a.m. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight to low in the upper 50s. And mostly sunny for tomorrow, high mid-80s. Showers and storms possible Friday night and Saturday, a little more humid for the weekend. High near 80 Saturday, sunshine in mid-80s Sunday. It's 69 degrees right now.
Pat Kreitlow.
Friday morning, we'll get you ready for the Packers home opener as they get set to host the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday, plus a visit with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number is 855-752-4842. Man, what a night. Just an announcement, though, just in case everybody knows, yes, President or ex-President TFG, you know, Mr. Trump might be coming in to step over Busted Pencils. I know. We put in some complaints, but no, if he gets up there and speaking in lacrosse tonight, just if you hear Busted Pencils take out right then, we will still continue live on our socials. But Civic Media will be covering President Trump if he and when he comes to actually speak. Right now we're hearing he's delayed in Michigan. And so if he can get out of Michigan and get over to Wisconsin and get to lacrosse, then Civic Media will be bringing some of that coverage. But for now, it's Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. Hey, just a reminder to be a voter Tuesday, September 17th, National Voter Registration Day. Plan to check your voter registration then to be sure you're ready for November 5th. And yeah, one more time, Civic Media is getting recombobulated. Dan Schaefer and his beloved Milwaukee News and opinion publication, the Recombobulation Area, join the Civic Media Radio Network. Johnny, are you there, my friend?
Well, we can give it a try. How's it sound?
Yeah, you're there, man. Go. There you are.
Hey, it's always good to have a second soundboard in your backpack. You know, I got my travel gear with me. I'm live from my classroom today, Tim. So you know the really expensive soundboard is useless to us, but the little Vocaster one is carrying its weight. I'm glad I'm here with you.
Oh, that little
and
Vocaster.
I'm glad to be with these guests tonight.
Absolutely. I tell you what it is. It's Wisconsin Public Education Network night. We got them here. We got some special guests. We're going to be talking everything dealing with Wisconsin. Well, actually, we're going to really dig into that topic. Referendum. Why do we need them? What's happening? You know what, though? Jenny Hofschutte. How are you, Jenny? We want to say hello to you first because you've been on Busted Pencils before. So welcome back, Jenny. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back. It's Hofschulte.
Hofschulte, I'm
just for correction's sake there. Yeah. But I'm a Milwaukee Public Schools mom of 20 years and a proud public education advocate. And I work with the Wisconsin Public Education Network, and we love being on Busted Pencils. So thanks for always hosting members of our team.
And you're bringing a guest with you tonight. Why don't you do the introductions for us there, Jenny?
Well, I'm just going to tip it right over to Tom because it's not often that we get some administrators to step to the plate with us. So, Tom?
Sure. Tom. Thank you. My name's Tom Wormuth. I'm the district administrator in the Adams Friendship Area School District. I'm starting my 41st year in education this fall. So very excited and have served two school districts over the last 12 or 13 years as superintendent, and both of those districts have basically survived from referendum to referendum.
So, Tom, 40-some years in public education, all in Wisconsin, too?
No, I was in Vermont and Illinois for a little while as well, but I was born and raised in Madison, taught in Wausau and Middleton, and had a variety of positions in the River Valley School District prior to coming to Adams Friendship.
Well, welcome to Busted Pencils, both of you, Tom and Jenny. Yeah, it's Fully Leaded Education Talk, and we love having Wisconsin Public Education Network on the show once a month, always making sure we can bring everything that's happening in Wisconsin public education. So, team, though, you know, before we get started on the referendum, though, just wondering how you guys have been feeling. We want to continue the conversation a little bit. The Democratic National Convention joyfulness that we've been celebrating. Jenny, Tom, any thoughts? What did you think about what's happening right now? You know, Walz being the vice presidential, Harris. Jenny, what do you think?
So first, I'll start with the fact that we are an informal and nonpartisan alliance of parents and educators and school board members. if my personal opinion were to slip into this a little bit, it is really refreshing to have a full-throated public education support coming from a national stage. This current administration, in our opinion, has been kind of mild, the Biden-Harris administration, and has been kind of mild on public schools, but also not working hard to dismantle or destroy public schools as the previous administration. So we at WPN are feeling pretty good about the joy. And, you know, we have a little saying around WPN that our job is to help close the joy gap so that all kids have joyful education experiences.
I love that.
We kind of feel like she might have borrowed a line from us.
Yeah, I think that, guys, you know, just send their campaign a little note just in case. They'll mention Wisconsin Public Education Network next time there. Wait, they're doing a press conference tomorrow on CNN. Maybe you can get them to say, hey, Wisconsin Public Education Network, thanks for the joy. Tom, your thoughts on the Democratic and again, either of the committees or the conventions. Republican convention was a couple weeks before that. You know, we talk about this, you know, the public education, it's on the ballot.
It really is. And right now, based on what we saw in the DNC, I'm very hopeful. And that's the term that I'm using, in addition to the joy that I believe was felt during that convention.
Yeah, equal opportunity, too. We've pointed this out, and Jenny, we said, you know, the Biden, I guess the way you say it, it's like they haven't outright gone for destroying, and it's been kind of, you know, nice to take a break. But when you look back over 2000 through 2000 through 2024, it's been a rough ride for public education, whether it's been a Democratic administration or a Republican administration, largely around the whole high stakes testing privatization movement, where it seemed like for the longest time, both parties were perfectly fine with advocating some form of destruction towards our public schools. Johnny Lupinacci, you're nodding away there.
Well, yeah, man. I mean, we've been talking about it, Tim, for weeks, and we can go even further back. And so just excited to, again, I think Jenny put it really well, you know, optimism. And I'm still reeling. I love that closing the joy gap.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, hey, let's see. Can we have an administration that really advocates for public schools? Not just one that doesn't harm it, because we know that ticket, right? But one that pushes it further and strengthens it so that the good work that folks like Tom and Jenny and so many others are doing, right, is you know, amplified in so many ways. And it reaches really ultimately all those children who deserve and really to strengthen our democracy need, you know, a really good public education.
Yeah. It's Busted Pencils. Jenny, jump in there.
Oh, I was just going to say, too, like to lean into the expertise that already exists in our schools. Like we sometimes hear political figures, you know, wringing their hands and woe is me-ing about test scores and this and that and things that are wrong with our schools. But we don't spend a lot of time leaning into the people who are doing the work every day in the building. I mean, if you ask a teacher which kids in her class are struggling, he or she does not need a standardized test to tell you that, right? Mm-hmm. And if we really drilled into root issues for students and when students aren't as well performing, it's very little to do about what happens actually in that school box. And like, it has more to do with what the community's commitment is to our kids. And that starts, in the White House and comes all the way through each state. So,
Yeah, definitely. So, Jenny, just a quick reminder, though, to Wisconsin Public Education Network. Just remind listeners again, who are you? What are you guys doing? 10 years, you can go into that. Just had a summit. Give us a little refresher on the Wisconsin Public Education Network.
So the Wisconsin Public Education Network is actually a project of the Wisconsin Alliance for Excellent Schools, and it's a C3 nonpartisan nonprofit organization, and we are supported by voluntary contributions and partnerships around the state, and our sort of informal crew of people and our paid organizers around the state are people who are committed to ensuring public schools are great in every area of the state and that they have the resources they need, and to help people not only promote and advocate for their own local schools, but to see the bigger picture and how the state influences what happens in our schoolhouses, and to draw stronger coalitions of advocacy. There's a lot of people that had been doing this like sort of in their own silos around the state, no pun intended, in the dairy state. And Act 10 was a real watershed moment in our state, obviously, when our teachers union was busted and other really harsh mechanisms of politics were used against our public schools. So about 10 years ago, all those silos kind of decided, like, why aren't we working together in a more concerted effort to raise these issues and help inform the public about what's going on, and to help them see the picture bigger than sometimes the snazzy headlines, things the media wants to focus on.
So, and Jenny, too, 10 years, right? Now, this is 10 years. In fact, you know, Jess and I, we had a great time at the 10-year summit right there. I wonder if you want to do a little highlights. What was your best part of the 10-year summit?
I think some of the best part of our 10-year summit was just the number of people who showed up that day. You know, we had just over 250 registrants, and we served over 300 lunches. You know, so people showed up in Madison area. And the nice thing about our summer summit, it is a conference. It's a one-day conference with a workshop. But it is a place for school administrators, school board members, regular parent advocates, educators, the neighbors across the street from the school who want to come and see what's going on that day. I did meet that lady in Madison. just curious about what was up with our cute yard signs. But it's a place for anyone who feels they have a stake in our public schools, which in a democratic society is everyone is welcome at that meeting to learn about policy, advocacy, and the needs of our kids. So that was the exciting part for me, is that it isn't a conference that's just for administrators or just for educators. It's for all of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We said, and Jess and I just really, man, we got to meet some incredible people. Tom, real quick, how often, or how your involvement with Wisconsin Public Education Network beyond the district work you're doing?
I've been involved with WPEN for probably 7 or 8 years, both in the River Valley School District and in Adams Friendship, helping facilitate community engagement around referendum activities.
Mm. So that's been kind of your focus on the topic we'll be talking about today, the referendum and how they work. Johnny, man, we've said we've covered this. We keep going back over it because we have to, because
it's important.
Because we're talking about funding and how do we get there? Why is the referendum? You know, we always bring up my neighbor always wants to know why does he have to vote to pay more taxes? Well, we've got great guests, Wisconsin Public Education Network, Jenny and Tom, here to help us break down, understand referendum very specifically too in Wisconsin, how we get there, and really, man, just check it out. Hey, make sure too, if you're watching Facebook, yeah, you can be checking us out. If you're on the Twitter X, that's what we call it here, the Twitter X, you can be getting us following the Civic Media link. And YouTube, too. You can be watching us live, because everybody knows that watching Busted Pencils is the fun. Text us. Call us 855-752-4842. More with Jenny and Tom, Wisconsin Public Education Network. Hold tight.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
The Morning Show on WFHR. It's serious comedy.
Many people struggle with a lot of these things, though, like making and maintaining friends, making new friends. Mm. These are things that actually, like, I'm very envious of the people that are good at making friends or can just start a conversation with just about anybody.
What people don't understand is that's why James hired me and Melissa, not because, you know, we're talented or anything. He's lonely.
Very.
That's how he gets friends. He hires them to work with him.
My friends' contact list, it is three guys.
Weekdays from 8 to 10.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Everybody knows there's a revolution when you're a teenager. You're looking for it. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny just shared with me. We call it the Twitter X, the Twix. Johnny, I did not know that that's what the kids are calling Twitter nowadays, Twix.
Yeah, I've been hearing it too in some of the socials. You know, we've said it, Tim. We've stumbled and said, hey, we got to tweet that out. Or, you know, what do you call it? What a great kind of thing to call a post on Twitter was a tweet, but
right.
The kids these days, my students have said, oh, you mean a Twix? And I thought that was interesting. Little spin and morph on stuff. So if you tweet something now, I guess it's called a Twix. You can put it in a Twix. I mean, who knows if that sticks? I just hearing it from the youth.
We love that. And Jenny was there too going like, whoa, check that out. I don't know. Twitter X. You mean that doesn't sound right. The whole X thing. Tweet was such an awesome thing when they had it, you know, and threads are out there. But yeah, now it's a repost, but I do kind of like that Twix. Although I wonder what Twix, the candy company, would be saying about that. I think they might have a little bit more to say about that. Okay. Jenny, Tom.
Yes.
Wisconsin. The referendum. Who wants to be the first person to say, like, so what is a referendum when that happens? When I see somebody's yard sign saying vote yes on the referendum, what does that mean? Why? What's happening? What's going on?
Well, I'll let Tom go with this, and then I'll talk about some of the historical data.
Okay.
Sure, and I think you almost have to start with the history. In the 1993-1994 school year, revenue limits were enacted in the state of Wisconsin, and the revenue limits are based on a per pupil amount of money, and it's increased over time. But Act 10 was mentioned previously, but since around 2010, the per pupil funding under a revenue limit in the state of Wisconsin is about $3,000, according to the Wisconsin Association of School Business Officials, behind inflation. So as that's progressed year after year, school districts, the only way in Wisconsin to increase your funding above this revenue limit number for both operational costs or capital construction costs is to go to referendum. And on an annual basis in the state of Wisconsin, you see more and more school districts that are literally surviving from referendum to referendum.
That's excellent. Jenny, did you want to throw in some of that part you were going to layer onto that? Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, with the districts being largely funded with that combination of state and local property taxes, these mixes of revenues, when it's local property taxes, it really creates a disparate situation in the state, too, where wealthier communities are able to invest more of their local dollars into their schools. So it kind of exacerbates those joy gaps and opportunities for kids. And then also, we've just seen a dramatic increase in the number of school districts that have been having to go to these local referendums around the state. So in the spring, there was about 103 referendums between the February and April ballots, and they pass at about a 60% rate. And for this fall now, we're expecting to be about 54 referendums, so a little bit less. It is a presidential election year, so in these odd number elections, or even number, they're more likely to pass, right? And so that type of thing, voter turnout really has a impact on school referenda outcomes, but we have seen a decline in that percentage. You know, people have self-taxation fatigue, and our school doors have become like really hotbed places for these conversations about like what the taxpayer is getting out of your public schools without thinking about how important it is for the community to be pouring into the schools, because what's in the schools but our kids, right, in the future. So people's conversations have really taken a turn away from kids in schools and opportunities to learn, and it's become like a very political conversation around taxation and what we're getting.
And just one other thing, underneath that hard cap of a revenue limit, each school district in Wisconsin is funded on a mix of local property taxes and state funding to get to the revenue limit. And the really interesting thing about that mix is that it's not necessarily an accurate picture of the community. So the school district that I serve has one of the highest percentages of students on free and reduced price lunch in the state. We just certified next year at 70%. But in the funding formula, we look wealthy because we have a lot of property value. We really just have a lot of property. We're a large geographic school district that serves a relatively small student population. We have a lot of property value behind each student we serve. So that creates an inequity in how we're funded. So our local taxpayers this year are funding 78% of the revenue limit, and only 22% comes from the state. And in other districts in the state, that number is inverted because they have less property value behind each student they serve. And I know that's somewhat complex, but it's also part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, just that concept right there, Tom, a little bit about that. I mean, just I mean, got to tell you, it's the first time I've heard about that, the kind of reverse property versus in the number of students versus the property. As you talk about that, tell me a little bit more about that. I need to help me get more of understanding.
Sure. So school districts have this hard revenue limit that they can only raise money up to that revenue limit. And it's kind of like a glass of cola you'd get at a fast food restaurant. Cola would be the good stuff that comes from the state, and the ice is local property taxes. So each district in the state of Wisconsin, and there are over 420, has a different mix of local property taxes and state funds to reach that hard cap revenue limit. And districts like ours that have a lot of property behind each student, we have about $1.5 million behind each student we serve, get penalized. Even though our student population is very poor, we get penalized in the state funding formula because we look like a very wealthy school district.
Mm. On that too, just pointing that out there, I mean, has there been discussions to say like, wait a minute, this shouldn't be this way? I mean, it sounds, as you're talking to me, Tom, it sounds like, wait, well then let's fix that.
In when revenue limits were enacted in 1993, the 1993-1994 school year, then Governor Thompson said that they should be reviewed and revised within 5 years. And we're still waiting.
Hmm. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Yeah, check it out, though, too. We're talking to Tom and Jenny, Wisconsin Public Education Network referendum. Yeah, it's one of those things that we need to learn so much more about. The socials, yes, Facebook, Twitter, Busted Pencils. More when we get back.
When you were young and you wanted to set the world on fire. kissed.
This is Locally Grown Radio, WFHR.
CBS News Brief. A judge dismisses two more counts in former President Donald Trump's election interference case in Georgia. CBS's Nicole Killian with more.
This is significant in the sense that we did hear from the former president's attorney who said that he has prevailed again. That is Stephen Sadow, who represents the former president in this Georgia case.
In Arizona, former President Trump tells supporters there will be no more debate. CBS's Nancy Cordes reports the Harris campaign in North Carolina says it's entering an aggressive new phase.
Part of the plan is just to keep coming back to this state and the other battleground states again and again and again. Just show her face, press the flesh, and hope that that's enough to get her over the top.
PowerOutage.us says 164,000 customers are without electricity in Louisiana. In Morgan City, Malik Phillips made it through Hurricane Francine.
At first, it wasn't bad at all. Once the winds pick up and the rain started a little, it got a little rough.
The storm now threatens portions of Mississippi to the Florida Panhandle. CBS News Brief, I'm Jeff.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The candidates for 8th District Congress in Northeast Wisconsin will debate in 2 weeks. More from Lisa Hale.
Democrat Kristen Lierley and Republican Tony Weed have agreed to a debate proposed by the independent nonprofit Mouth Center in Green Bay. The debate will be on September 27th, but no time has been announced yet. It will be televised on WBAY. I'm Lisa Hale.
Appleton has the best tasting tap water in Wisconsin, according to the local utility officials from around the state. The Wisconsin American Water Works Associated held its fall conference in Madison. Appleton sources its water from Lake Winnebago. The city's water ranked highest for taste, odor, and texture. Appleton goes on to the national contest next summer in Denver. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. It's one thing to have a child outside your marriage, and another thing to have people claiming to be the mom of your out-of-wedlock child all over social media with pictures of babies and fake posts. This is happening to Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters right now. The frontman acknowledged Tuesday that he had a baby girl with a woman who was not his wife. Now people are posting fake pictures of said baby and pretending to be the child's mother. Some sources are reporting that Grohl's wife, Jordan Blum, has hired a divorce attorney in light of the news. Grohl says he plans to do everything in his power to be a loving father to the new baby like he is to his three daughters with Blum. The Batman director Matt Reeves says his trilogy for the Batman will stick close to the trilogy he envisioned. Deadline reports that while Reeves was promoting his spin-off series, The Penguin, he assured fans and the media his vision for the franchise is sound. The Batman 2 is scheduled to start filming in 2025. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Stars, a few clouds around for the overnight hours with light winds. Temperatures dropping to the upper 50s by sunrise. For your Friday, a mix of clouds and sunshine, highs in the lower 80s. Our winds out of the southeast gusting up around 20. It's 69 at our studios.
To everyone who loves Culver's, the feeling is mutual. I'm Nicole from Culver's of Cross Plains, Wisconsin. And when I'm serving you a Butterburger, I'm just as happy as you are. I almost get giddy when I hear the sizzle of our fresh beef on the grill. Seeing that smile that comes from a meal made just right, some call it magic. But I like to call it love at first bite. Stop in for a cook-to-order Butterburger and let us make Culver's your happy place.
From Wisconsin with love,
welcome to Delicious.
Culver's on 8th Street South in Wisconsin Rapids.
Hi everyone, Seth here from Seth Faces the Music. You know, being the host of the award-winning second greatest radio show in the state of Wisconsin can be a lot of work. I have to come up with new themes all the time. So in the interest of clarity, here are some topics I will not be using in upcoming episodes.
Mittens, tinfoil, gastric bypass surgery, window treatments, 17th century Japanese art, outhouses, bowler hats, spam, clog dancing.
Seth Faces the Music, every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. only on WFHR.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Dan Schaefer at 10:33 from the recombobulation area. Hour number two. If you know some young wannabe aviators, young eagles, don't miss it.
Matinair on air. Weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
And we're back. This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. We are here with great guests from the WPEN. We're talking about referendum, school funding 101. We're deep in it. We're getting great information. Just want to put a notification out there for those folks listening live on the radio or on the Civic Media app. If you're following the discussion and you want to stay with it, we might get interrupted because, you know, there's a certain guy who's running for office who's going to be in La Crosse doing a town hall pretty soon. And live coverage will cut to that. And we'll continue on the stream. So if you want to bounce over and follow on the stream, you can on Facebook or on X or on whatever the medium is that you follow on. You could keep live with the WPEN guests. And if you're also interested in following that La Crosse event, well, it will cut live to that. And you can come back around and you'll be able to listen to this recording on the Civic Media webpage later after you've digested whatever he says in La Crosse. But we are here. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, school funding, referendums 101 with our great guests from the Wisconsin Public Educators Network. We got a caller. So we were just talking about how schools are school funding is tied directly to property taxes. And we got a caller, L.A. Tom, on the line. L.A. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Not real happy to hear about Dom and Crute today, but that's another story that hopefully I'll fight another day. But I wanted to ask Tom or Jenny, in terms of this idea of property taxes being the way that schools are funded, can you tell me when that started? I've tried to research it. I don't know where in the government that started. I think it's ridiculous. Because obviously if you don't have nice homes and you don't have big houses that have more property tax revenue in there, your school is not going to get that type of love, so to speak. And I think that we should all strive for equity, equality as well, but equity between our school systems. Especially, I went to a public school in Durand, Wisconsin. I live in Los Angeles now. But yeah, I think it's something that I want to know what the early things of that were. And also, I did want to respond. I also wanted to say that there's a Glenwood City superintendent. There was a forensic audit done, and it revealed that Glenwood City District lost more than $300,000 to fraudulent activities. And I think we should really make a strive for having people that are actual teachers become superintendents.
Yeah, L.A. Tom. Okay, Tom, want to help L.A. Tom?
And I, you know, I don't know the answer to that. I know in some of the education history classes I took, small communities started funding one-room schoolhouses in the state of Wisconsin. And I don't know exactly, and maybe Jenny does, when it became much more formalized and funded primarily through local property taxes.
Well, for the first about 100 years of our country, this federal government had a very hands-off approach to public education and you know, democratized education across the state and or across the states, right? States' rights, mm-hmm. regional, local control. And so actually I was in Wisconsin in 1911 was the first time a local property tax was used and raised strictly for public schools. And that set off the firestorm. So by the 1940s, it became kind of the norm nationwide to start with the baseline of local property tax.
Hmm. I mean, you think about it, right? There's some form of it sounds commonsensical, logical. You know, you live in the district, you have some property, we're going to fund, we have a public school system that is supposed to be there for everybody. So if you're there, you know, how do you contribute part of your property taxes? Like, I could just see some people sitting around going, yeah, it makes sense. You know, to do it in that direction. What doesn't make sense, though, here is when you hear Tom talking about what's happening in his district and or even the points now, too, of this whole idea of property taxes and the realities of saying it's like, how do we fund public schools? And we've also heard the words equity and equality and the differences even between those two terms, equality and equity. Johnny, you were putting that in the chat.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, there it is. Wait, what's that sound? That's the bell we hear every day here on Busted Pencils. You know, we are just about to get into that equality and equity bit and ask Tom a little bit more about what's happening in the district, because I think that's a really good thing for listeners to follow along with why referendums exist and how important they are to our quality schools. But here we do this every day, 6:40, the bell rings, and we have democracy in action recognition. And it's actually couldn't be more perfectly timed, because the Republican candidate for presidency just landed and is going to be in La Crosse, you know, doing a town hall. And there are all kinds of really great folks at Civic Media who are hitting the ground, and this will cut to live coverage of that. So today's Democracy in Action is actually those hardworking journalists all over that are on the ground helping us get truthful information, right? So truth is a core democratic value, and that's that the government and the citizens should not lie, and we should hold each other accountable to honesty. And so one of the ways we do that is through really good on-the-ground journalism. So Civic Media is there. So if we cut to that, folks, you can continue to listen to us on the stream, because we have a really great conversation going right now with Tom and Jenny about school funding and referendums. And there was this thing brought up. I mean, Tom's talking about, hey, in terms of property tax, let me see if I understand this, Tom, because I'm the common listener for a minute here. And I'm saying, hey, that doesn't sound right. Wait, so you have high property tax, they're high property values. So you have this illusion that you should be flush with cash in your schools. But that's not the case, because there are a lot of children who are living in conditions that we would categorize as they're experiencing poverty. And so they have high needs in our schools. So can you everyday language, my neighbor's confused, Tom, explain this phenomena.
Sure. The school district that I serve currently, the property values are not high. We're a very poor school district. We're also a very large school district, very low property value school district. So we serve 1,300 students in approximately 500 square miles. And what we have is not a lot of property value per se behind each student in the state funding formula. We just have a lot of property. So in the state funding formula, because we have less than three students per square mile, we have over $1.5 million worth of property value behind each student. But the students we serve and the families that live in our district are relatively economically disadvantaged. So 70% of our student population qualifies for free and reduced price lunch. But within the state funding formula, we look wealthy.
I get it, Tom. So now I understand it. So those students and their families, they don't own the property. And in fact, so this makes it look, while there's a lot of property, it's not lived on or owned by or in some way profiting families and of that community. So the students attending school, this makes a ton of sense. And that property isn't necessarily generating revenue that goes through taxes into the schools.
Not at all.
This makes more sense. So you see, this system is really not a good system. Hence why I'm guessing here for like referendum 101, like you said, there's a lot of ice in the cup, right? And so we got a really watered down, I love that metaphor you used. We got a really watered down, cup of Coke, and that's absolutely not cutting it for what the kids need in education terms. So when that happens, in a sense, that's referendum 101. We have to turn to passing a referendum, right? Is that the right understanding? Tom's nodding, so.
Yeah, that's correct. And the only way that you can generate funds above this revenue limit, that's $3,000 per student behind inflation, is to go to referendum.
So if we can continue on this line of 101, Jenny, Tom, whoever, like keep elaborating, because this is really illuminating it for folks. So what's the referendum process then? So we know why we have to go to it, but let's talk about the process for listeners.
Basically, a school district, your board of governance has to elect a and agree that a referendum is something you want to pursue, then they work with some lawyers to make sure that the ballot question or questions is extremely lawyerly. Mm. It doesn't have to be so lawyerly, but they get awfully complicated sometimes, because what happens is whatever that word, whatever word choices those are the things that you can spend the money on. So if you go and look on our Department of Public Instruction's website, where they'll list out all of the referenda questions in the state, you'll notice really intense language in them, because they're trying to pack it in to make sure that however that money, if it comes to them, is being spent on things they actually need. There has been a dramatic increase in the number of operational referendas in the state. So those are districts that are electing just to keep the lights on or to keep their staff paid, versus, field houses and things like that. And some of this disparate nature of school funding is like currently Arrowhead High School, which is one of the highest performing, wealthiest areas of the state. They're going to referenda because the actual school facility was built in the 70s, the high school, and it's deteriorating. They don't have a great, they don't have an ADA compliant auditorium and some other spaces in the building, but they have this a massive, amazing, beautiful sports facilities that wrap around that actually draw in a lot of students, right? Which is revenue. But families in that community are not believing the situation right now that they actually need the referenda in order to make these upgrades to the physical educational building of it, right? Because the football field looks so gorgeous and the field house is so amazing. But all of that came from private donors. So sometimes the private donor investment in some of those outside things really can exacerbate this problem of getting the community on board to support the school, because it looks real flashy from the outside. But on the inside, they're showing pictures of mold, deteriorating walls and things like that. So basically your school district has to, your governance has to elect to go to referenda. The other hitch in this giddy up too is like once the district agrees to go to referenda and writes this ballot questions, all they can say is here are the questions and we're doing this. The district isn't allowed to tell you how to vote. It's hard, and it makes people really nervous, the legalities of how full-throated they can be about these situations. So the school district really needs a yes committee, which is a committee of community members, civic leaders that will step forward to really promote the yes side of it, because they can go into other meetings and say, vote yes for this, right? And that's where Wisconsin Public Education comes in. And I think in this next bit, Tom can tell you a little bit about how our team has supported school districts around the state in their yes committees.
Awesome. That's exactly what I was wondering. I was like, I think Tom is saying he has a really great example of the relationship between WP and a district needing to go to referendum.
Yes. So in the fall of 22, during the 22-23 school year, we knew that a previous five-year referendum was going to fall off the table. And we also knew that every year our deficit continues to grow because our funding isn't keeping pace with inflation. And so we created a very legal-like referendum question. It has to be done 90 days before the election, and there's a lot of legal processes to follow. And we went to referendum for a little over $12 million over a four-year period in the fall of 22. And there were about 5,500 voters in our area. And we lost that referendum by about 800 votes. And we needed the money, so we turned around and went right back to referendum in the spring of 23. Same amount of money, but we engaged more with WPEN, and they helped us organize our community. They helped us re-message what we were doing, and we were able to basically asked for the same amount of money with WPEN's help in the spring of 23, and were able to pass that referendum by over 200 votes. So we actually switched about 1,000 votes in a very short period of time.
Man, great story there. It's Wisconsin Public Education Network on Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Hey, yeah, right now, when we get back, you're only going to have Busted Pencils on the socials, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, not new. Okay. Just Facebook.
Just on Facebook and YouTube for Busted Pencils.
Okay. Busted Pencils, Facebook, YouTube. You can come back and get us live. Man, we got more.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Matt Nair on Air.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. You know what's near and dear to my heart? The lotto. Oh, I love me some scratch-offs. I buy them and put them in everybody's stocking at Christmas. But, and this is a big one, I also know that buying lotto tickets is mathematically and financially what my grandpa would have called a waste of money. The internet is full of hilarious ways to show how bad our chances of winning are. Like that we are 20,000 times more likely to be struck by lightning than to win the Powerball. So, if your goal is to have more money in the future and you enjoy the occasional scratch-off, recognize that the lotto is a little bit of hope and fun and not much more than that. I spend 10 or 20 bucks on it every year and I enjoy those moments to the max. When I'm done, I go back to being smart about my money, which I'm here to help you do too. For more everyday money tips, check out Work Money Media on YouTube. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Oh, there it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Yeah. Wisconsin Public Education Network with us. Jenny Hoff Schulte, Tom Wormuth, talking about referendums. And Tom, you had such a great story there of, you know, you went to referendum in the fall of 22, lost by what, 500 votes, bring Wisconsin Public Education Network in the spring, and the referendum passes by 200 votes. Jenny, how does that happen?
Well, first of all, I don't want to dog on this great story, but I am going to dog on the legislature a little bit first. So our network spends a lot of time educating the community about school funding, and we absolutely do not want to be in the referendum business for 1 second, because we shouldn't be funding our schools this way in such an inequitable joy gap widening way, right? And it's heartbreaking. And there are districts that face disillusion and like what kind of imbalance that brings to a community. So WPN does not want to be in this boat. In fact, we spend a ton of time encouraging people to show up for state budget actions, finance meetings, meeting with your legislature, trying to tell your local stories to get them to give a damn about what's going on in our schools, to help not just give more money in each biennium, but like to fix the funding formula, right? And to make it so that school districts aren't on pins and needles all the time, and that we didn't have such a punitive system where we're constantly trying to kick people about their state test scores when we know there's so much more that goes into those, right? So what we do with the referenda teams is our local organizers around the state meet with local teams, those yes teams, help educate them so they can be good messengers of the story of how we're funding schools in the state. And then to help people ask really great questions, not only of your local school board about how money spent and budget allocations are made, but just how the state is funding the schools, and to help people understand the stories bigger than your vote yes question, right? A lot of times people will come in and they'll be like, they must be, you know, embezzling, they must be doing something wrong, you know, and like they pay people too much. And like, I don't know anybody who works in a public school that thinks the teachers are making too much, right? So we really use those to tell the story of the community. And then just to raise the story about like what your public school means to you as the heart of your community. You know, for some places, it's the largest employer of a region or area. People love their Friday night lights. It's a sense of community. Generations have attended those public schools. And sometimes you get a little gap in people's, you know, sweet memories of it, and you have to revive those things for them. So we spend a lot of time with the S committees talking with them about like, what do you love about your public schools? What story do you want to tell? What vision do you have for what kids in your community need right now? And then what education is going to look like in your community going forward? So that's a lot of the work that we do, is just talking things through and empowering local groups. We like, you know, we'll vet their language on certain things or look at their yard signs before they print them and I will say one more thing. We connect them with other people who have been on these yes committees around the state too. So like we connect people, you know, from Sheboygan to La Crosse, from, you know, Sturgeon Bay down to Bristol, just like they've been in that boat and you're not alone. And sometimes just knowing how many referenda we've had can really light the fire in somebody. We have a business leader right now helping with the yes committee on the northern part of the state. And he like doesn't have kids and doesn't, said he never cared, but he's mad as hell about how we're funding schools. And like, he knows how important that school is to the city. Right. But he hadn't thought about it until someone knocked on his door and was like, are you going to vote yes for our referenda? And he was like, what are you talking about? And now he's like, he's our biggest cheerleader.
But that's that. I love just that part of the story there, the ability to go out there and take a resident and to have them, I don't have kids in the school, and just like all of a sudden, like, wait a minute, but this is important. This is the heart of our community. And the way you put that out there, Jenny, you know, these aren't yes committees as much as they're, to me, they're storytelling committees that are helping people connect to those stories that sometimes, as you, and you said this, you know, very much the same way too, to remind them that these are your schools and that you have a connection to them. You might have forgotten it. You know, maybe it's been years since your kids were in school, or maybe you're a grandparent, but you have some vision, some memory that we help them link back into. And, you know, so think about what happened in Tom's district there then, to go, you know, in the span of what, 6 months, to get that type of a change in the voter to go forward. I wonder, though, too, is at what point, because, Jenny, doing all of this work, Wisconsin Public Education Network, getting these yes committees out to constantly be, you know, getting the referendum passed, do you guys have time, though, to continue working with the legislature on the real issue, which is we need to not go to referendum anymore?
I mean, we do have a budget, biennial budget coming up this spring. So our hope is to get some of these yes committees to be turning up for those budget actions. You know, all of this referendum business around our public schools is happening in tandem to this great expansion in our voucher program in the state and how much money is being poured into parochial and choice schools, right? And then we have open enrollment across the state where school districts can take students from other school districts. So this like very competitive nature took a long time for school districts to start to tell the truth about their story of their financial struggles, because you didn't want to be the school district that said you were struggling financially, because that would make people have pause. They could start looking around in other communities, you know. So this funding by referendum is happening in tandem to this big choice movement, and then this redirecting of public money into parochial schools. Those things get flashy headlines, and then people who don't have kids in schools and aren't hearing those stories start to believe the hype about, like, well, why do we need public schools? And and it's our job collectively to remind them, not only do we need public schools, but we need people who care about them to show up at the state house to tell the legislature to spend the money on our kids. I mean, they're sitting on a giant surplus right now. And that story doesn't get enough story, because they could fill a lot of these holes instantly, literal stroke of pen.
That's awesome. Absolutely. And one of our themes for the week is to practice corporeal politics, to get out and to talk with one another, to be part of, like you're saying, yes committees, but also to understand how we can collectively change the need to even have referendums. So one of the really important things, too, I want our listeners to be able to get is, Jenny, where can listener get connected to yes committees all over the place? Where can they find out more information about WPEN?
I think the best place to start for us is just going to Wisconsin Network, all one word, wisconsinnetwork.org. There you're going to find a wealth of resources from us on not only yes and referendum committees, but budgeting and getting together and connecting around public schools around the state. And it is a landing place for anybody who cares about public schools. You don't have to be an educator. You don't have to be an administrator. You don't even have to be a podcast host. You can just join the network.
Wisconsin Public Education Network, busting pencils. See y'all tomorrow night.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Civic Media Sports Director Jimmy Cuska drops by to give us a preview of this weekend's Packer game. And it's a bar band Friday night as Max Inc.'s Terry Barr joins the show with new music.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR.
Fear you're missing out when you miss our conversations on air? You can always join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.